two crazy porks who host a show. They give relationship advice that you ought to know. Your thirst for entertainment, they will quench, cause Stephanie's a darling and Mike is a mensch. Pork therapy, advice this good is a rarity. It's cool, fun, and introspective. Relationship talk from a liberty perspective. Oh, and did I mention you can leave a message, you can voice a question, a joke, a comment, or something more at 419-PT-LOVE-4. Pork therapy, scatty-dee-bop, shabba-dooey, the revel in hilarity, it's pork therapy.
Hello.
Hello.
And welcome to Pork Therapy.
Yay, this is Mike.
And this is Stephanie.
And we are Pork Therapy.
Yes, we are. That just sounded so, like, sing-song. It was like our... You know, we've done 142 shows, right? And our introduction has been slightly different every time, which I think is good.
Yeah.
But this time it was like a little too, I don't know, prearranged. I
guess. But it wasn't.
But it just sounded that way. So anyway, we are Pork Therapy.
Yay.
You can visit our website at porctherapy.com to find all of our shows and ask us your relationship questions because, of course, we are a show about relationships from a voluntarist perspective.
Right.
Right, Mike?
Yeah, and our little slogan changed slightly yet again because now it's a voluntarist perspective, not a voluntary perspective. It's like
it used to be about voluntary relationships, and before it was liberty perspective, and before it was communication is key and all. We're so
all
bad at branding.
That's true. But all of these mean essentially the same thing.
They do, but they're getting slightly better as time goes on, I think. Yeah, we really need to pick something and stick with it because it's been 140 shows and if someone skips a couple of shows, they're going to come back and there's a completely different slogan. They're who are you and what have you done with Mike and Stephanie?
We've even changed our logo and our website appearance. At least we've never changed our name yet.
Well, not yet, but there's a first time for everything. Yes. Anyway, we're the two people who do a show about voluntary relationships and we talk about relationships and kind of how to, one of our most recent shows was about applying the non-aggression principle to romantic relationships. And I think that's kind of what we try to do with all relationships, not just romantic relationships. We are all about voluntary human interactions. We think that that's the best way for society to be. And that sounds a little bit too centrally planned, right?
Should be. No, it doesn't mean it should be or we will punish you. It's like, if you want, a healthy, happy relationship, it should probably be voluntary, not forceful.
Yep, I agree. And So we think human interaction should be voluntary, ought to be voluntary. And we try to have that come across in what we say and in our show. So we have a pretty interesting topic that's kind of along those lines today. Right, Mike?
Yeah, was it a year ago at Porkfest that we got a question that was, how do you talk about, or how do you convince your spouse to move to New Hampshire for liberty
if
you're an activist and she's not, or something like that.
Right.
And if I recall correctly, we did a show on it, and it was awesome, but technical problems mean it never got aired. Is that the one?
That show did get aired, but the audio quality was really
horrible.
Poor.
Okay.
But yes, for listeners who are not familiar, Porkfest is the Porcupine Freedom Festival, and last year we were there recording shows together, and we had a question about how to convince a reluctant spouse to come to New Hampshire and hopefully move to New Hampshire
and
to participate in the Free State Project and get active for liberty in your lifetime, right?
And since then, we've had that question numerous, or at least a couple times.
Yeah.
And we even...
Or variations of it.
Right. We even talked about it on a show, but in a general form. Not move to New Hampshire for liberty, but a spouse that doesn't have the same beliefs as you.
Or same interests.
Right. Mm-hmm. And tonight, we have a guest who has firsthand experience of this.
Right. And guest, would you like to say hello?
Hey guys, it's Mandrick. Thanks for having me on, Mike and Stephanie.
Thank you very much for doing this show.
Thanks for being here and being willing to talk about your experiences,
your
too.
Your very personal stuff, and I'll thank you again at the end, I'm sure.
Well, we don't know how personal he's going to get. Before the show, I saw a preview of Mandrick dressed in his
costume
for Porkfest, and that's all I'm going to say about that. We're just going
to... Come to Porkfest. Or actually, you probably don't want to.
Anyway, so we had an email. Mandrick is one of the people who has emailed our show and asked us his relationship question, which, well, actually, no, you weren't really asking us a question. You were commenting on one of our episodes because...
I was just talking about my penis, actually.
Well, that's something we all like to do sometimes, but...
Apparently all Liberty Media like to do that sometimes.
Yeah. Even me, who doesn't have one, but...
Then maybe I just talk
about other people's. But anyway, we were talking about circumcision on one of our episodes, and then we asked for feedback from our listeners.
Who had talked to their parents
about it, and yeah, had either, you know, thanked their parents for keeping them intact, or their bodily integrity intact, or had, you know, kind of made it clear to their parents that, you know, they didn't, their knees were not met by being circumcised, yeah.
As a child without, permission, without consent, without knowledge.
Right.
And Mandrake responded, and I thought your question to your mom was fantastic, and your mom's response was fantastic, so thanks for that.
Sure.
Yeah, and what was that, just a review for our listeners?
Oh, I mean, I had said about how I wasn't as a child, and my mom had said because...
You said, why didn't you...
I said, we had asked why I wasn't, and she said...
Why you weren't circumcised?
Yeah. And she said, because she didn't want to hurt me, I guess, as a baby. Mm-hmm. Which is... I don't know. I mean, I guess...
I think that's awesome.
What else could you say?
That's all that needs to be said.
I agree.
But
she left it up to you, and yesterday you got circumcised. Congratulations. just kidding.
Oh, no. That would be like the downfall of the entire,
Mike's actually doing it right after the show.
Doing it while we talk.
Yeah, as we speak.
So that was the onset of this topic, right?
Yes, because in Mandrake's email, he had said something about...
I said something about coming out of the closet as an atheist, and I said that I could say that for another time.
And I was really interested in what that would be like.
Yeah. Me too.
And I'd spoken with Mike in person about it at the Bardo Farm Festival a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And it's really personal, but I mean, I kind of want to share the story. It goes back. It's more than just about the atheism thing for me. And I think there's a lot of people in a similar situation. I know you guys were referencing the getting people who are in a relationship with a spouse that aren't liberty-oriented to come to Porkfest or New Hampshire or whatever. Or try to get them turned on to the ideas of liberty. Mm-hmm. And it has a lot to do with that, with the whole atheism thing as well. So it's all kind of connected.
I think, Mandrake, that you should feel proud that you're able to share this story, because I think people will find it valuable. And what you're doing, like people like us, people who believe in the ideas of voluntarism and liberty, should never be embarrassed about what we do or what we think, because we're not the crazy ones. We're the ones talking about peace and nonviolence, and respecting people's natural rights.
Sure.
Everyone else is the ones talking about violence, or maybe not knowing that they're advocating violence.
Forcing people to do things that they don't want to do.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. But, so there's no need to ever feel nervous. If you've thought through, and reasoned out what you believe in, then there's nothing to be worried about. Yeah.
So where can we start Mandrake's story?
It really has to start, it really has to go back to I became liberty-oriented, I guess, because,
okay.
I was big into the Ron Paul movement. Growing up, I was always in public school, and none of it ever really clicked with me. I reached the point where in middle school, I got tired of the whole pledging the flag thing. Was just, there was so much in the system.
You didn't say the Pledge of Allegiance in the flag, did you?
I never reached the point where I would just sit, and then I got in trouble, air quotes for that, but I stood my ground, but I mean, there was always something where a lot of people saw it as just being rebellious, and I guess it kind of was to an extent, but it was also just not accepting what was around me, but not really having a replacement, something to fill that with.
Well, I think rebellious connotes rebel without a cause, right?
Yeah,
it connotes just defying authority for the simple sake of being a contrarian or whatever, but...
Sounds like you were doing it for a purpose.
But there was I didn't know what the purpose was, though. It was just, there was something wrong, I didn't know what it was, but it just didn't seem right, and it's just like, why should I go along with this when this isn't the answer?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
So,
especially when nobody made an effort to convince you that it was right, or that it was somehow
explain
good.
Why. Just do it.
Just do it, because everybody else is doing it.
Yeah,
exactly.
So, and I think that leads to a lot of apathy, with regards to certain things like political system and stuff. So growing up, I mean, I reached a certain age where I didn't really care about certain things like that, and I wasn't pro state or anything, but I didn't really have anything to fill that with. And then when the Ron Paul movement started, that really clicked with me.
Yeah.
But I mean, really, I was into that for a while, minarchist kind of viewpoints, and then by the summer of 2009, after listening to Free Talk Live for a week, I'd already had an agorist business by the end of the month. By the end of the month, I mean, it was just like instantly, this is exactly, oh, you know, the ideas of liberty. Yet, you know, I went from calling myself a Ron Paul Republican to calling myself a voluntarist within.
And what is your business? Selling crack, prostitutes? No,
selling murder for money. Crack laced prostitutes.
Crack laced prostitutes.
No, it's special. I'm deep fried.
You can snort coke off the belly of a dead prostitute.
Yeah.
Oh my, we that's awful.
It's you have to try it. Don't say it's awful. You really shouldn't judge.
That's what of they course thought about Jell-O shots.
Of course, we're totally kidding, yes. But you could say that it's almost as addictive as crack. It's baklava that he's selling.
Yeah, so I started my agorist baklava business in September of 2009.
Yeah.
And it's been
and
successful.
And what is agorism for people who don't know?
It's basically it's a Greek word, but basically the agora. Mm-hmm. And it's
open market.
Yeah, it's just a marketplace. But it really, an agorist is just somebody who just has a voluntary interactions with other people, you know, that without asking for permission to do it, or
no permits, right. No licenses, you know,
taxes,
right?
You know, so I
need to interrupt your story for just a minute, because sure. You started when you were a kid, and now you're back to 2009, and we're getting it. But at some point, you got married.
Oh yes, I did get married. Yeah.
Yes,
that is very important. Yeah.
Childhood. You're right.
Well, I was just talking about the liberty.
Yes,
but,
yes.
So I got married in February of 2003.
Okay.
And
you have a couple kids, right? When were they born?
I have twin girls.
Oh,
they
twins.
Yeah, identical twin girls. They were born in February of 2004.
Oh, whoa.
A week before our first anniversary.
Okay.
Six weeks early, so.
They were 2004. Premature girls. Okay, yes. So now you're up to 2009 and you're the Ron... now you're an agorist.
Well, but even if we're going to go back to that, I mean, we always... We did speak before we had kids. We agreed upon a lot of things, like how to raise the girls with, you know, with the church, mm-hmm. you know, the Greek Orthodox Church, and, you know, what school.
School.
We had all these discussions, and we were on the same page.
Right.
I mean, it was on the same page.
And you were raised hardcore Greek Orthodox, right?
I mean, if you're Greek Orthodox, you're pretty much sure. It's a cultural thing, too. It's not just a religious thing. It's anyone who's... even compared to Catholicism, I guess, like more like the old school Catholics, like the big Italian families that are Catholic. It's like that.
Right.
Only there's it's religion. I mean,
yeah.
So I mean, I got big in the Ron Paul movement, and that started. My wife wasn't really into politics, and that was fine. I didn't really have a problem with it during the Ron Paul campaign. It wasn't an issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I did my thing, and I had made some friends locally through the movement. But like I said, once I started listening to Free Talk Live, it was a complete change. And it wasn't just Free Talk Live. I mean, from there, I started listening to a lot more podcasts. And I think the one that really had a big influence on me...
Pork Therapy.
We didn't even exist.
Just kidding, yeah. Even before we existed, we had a big impact on people.
What was it? Which one was it?
I do have a DeLorean, and I just... No, it was the School Sucks podcast.
Cool.
And with Brett Vinat.
Fantastic show.
Yep, we love Brett and we love his podcast.
Yeah, I love Brett a lot, but I'm not, that's another show.
So around 2009, your ideas haven't changed, but you're starting to like see them elsewhere, like Ron Paul and School Sucks. Is that what's going on? You're starting to see...
Well, the Ron Paul thing just pretty much vanished once...
He didn't win.
Well, no, not even that, but I mean, it was still those ideas, the whole constitutionalist ideas, the minarchist ideas, they still stuck with me. But once I started listening to Free Talk Live... It's just I had a complete separation from the ideas of, you know, any type of government.
So you changed.
Absolutely.
You learned some more stuff and you changed.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it was like those ideas were always there. I just
the
pieces were put together and you know, just hearing it and it was
that's how it was for me
and
too.
And it's like I always grew up I don't want to say stubborn, but you can't convince me of something I don't want to believe in.
Right.
I mean, that's just how you can call it stubbornness, but I mean I don't
again with a purpose.
Yeah, I don't go along to get along. Just you know, I don't do it just because I just can't do that. So, so yeah, people can say, "Oh, you were brainwashed," but no, it was I heard the ideas, and it's just like it's exactly what I believe in. And
well, isn't it ironic that people would say that you're brainwashed because that's the whole
they're
government
the ones who
school
want to,
system?
Yeah, they want to believe things without thinking.
Right, kids are essentially born, you know, nonviolent beings. Right, they're good. On the inside, and they acknowledge that people have rights and people natural rights, and you know.
Well, not explicitly, but that's how they behave.
Right, right. They would never dream of using force to try to get someone to do something. I mean, unless that's what they're shown in their environment. I think if kids are raised peacefully, then they wouldn't dream of that for sure. But it's like the process of government school that brainwashes people into worshiping the state. Right.
Yeah.
It's the process of going to religious schools that brainwashes them into believing that there are magical beings in the sky and old stories that are fairy tales from thousands of years ago.
And you have to do this because it was done that way 1,000 years ago.
Yeah, and by the way, do whatever this priest says and give your money to him. So...
So you're learning new ideas and changing.
I just thought it was ironic that people were saying that you were brainwashed for liberty.
I don't know if anybody really said that way, but I could see how they could see that, like, oh, you know, you had a radical shift in your beliefs. I mean, it is a radical shift, no doubt about it.
And radical just means root, right? Yeah. Root striking.
So your children are, at this point, about 5.
What year did we say? 2009? Yeah, they're okay. 5 and a half, about 5 and a half.
And you've been together for 6 and a half-ish years. Mm-hmm. And you're changing.
I'm changing.
Okay, so what happens next?
So I start my agorist business, and I'm listening to a lot of shows. Really, it's just at this point, it's just absorbing information and processing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much, and it's just a lot. You know, it's a lot to think about. And I know, you know, my kids have just started kindergarten, you know, in a public school, you know, right when I started listening to School Sucks, so there was a lot of that. There was a lot of that conflict there, but. The religion thing, if we're going to talk about religion as well, it's so ingrained that anytime I thought about it and questioned it, I would stop thinking. Like, that's exactly what I would do. I would just stop questioning it. It would just be like, I'm not even going to try to think about this right now.
Wow.
Yeah. There's so much going on with the ideas of liberty that I just couldn't even face the ideas of religion.
Well, but also as probably what you learned as a kid is that if you question the ideas of religion, then you're going to get hurt. Right.
I mean, there's a lot of fear.
At least going to get love withdrawn from adults. I mean, that's a pretty common thing.
There was a lot of fear around that as well, but it was definitely a mix of that. So I just didn't even want to confront that. I didn't even want to cross that bridge. I was like, I like to handle. You know, I just wanted to work on these ideas of liberty. And like I said, so I was listening to a lot of different podcasts, and I started to see a conflict in the way. You know, my kids were being raised, and the way... Well, not my... I don't like saying my kids, but you know what I mean, like...
Your and her kids were being raised in conflict with your new ideas.
Yeah.
Now, as this conflict was starting, and as you started your agorist business and whatnot, how was your wife? Was she supportive or indifferent?
She was supportive and indifferent in terms of, like, the business.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, it was fine. I mean, it was bringing in some extra money. It wasn't a lot at first.
Okay.
I saw a lot around, you know, like the holiday times, Christmas time, Thanksgiving. People get a lot of orders. And, you know, I take advantage of that. So, I mean, yeah, it wasn't really an issue, I guess.
Okay.
So there really wasn't any issue until, I mean, as I continued to educate myself and spend time, you know, like I said, listening and reading things, I started to get the idea. I was like, hey, you know what? I want to go up to Porkfest in 2010. I want to go up.
That was the beginning of the end.
that was the end of the beginning. Yeah. The beginning of a new.
Yeah,
or something.
That's right.
But,
I like that better.
But I wanted to go up there because I was like, hey, I could sell my baklava. I'd just bring some up there and just sell it. That was the original idea, and it blossomed into this... It blossomed into this giant food stand selling gyros with another friend of mine, Jay. And it was... It was crazy successful. I mean, it was
super delicious.
We ran out of food. Yeah, it was awesome. We sold all our baklava, our gyros, everything we had, and we busted our butts. We worked really hard, and it was totally worth it. And the connections I made with so many people up there was amazing. I mean, that's really what it was. Even though I was behind a stand working the entire time, other than Saturday when we ran out of food the last day, other than that time, it's just people were coming up to me and. They had heard about me through Free Talk Live or through some other places where, you know, just getting name dropped or something about the baklava and coming up and selling food. Yeah, I mean, it was great. I mean, I made a lot of new friends. I mean, I was making friends throughout the year through, you know, through Facebook and through the Free Talk Live chat room. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was trying to make connections because it's important when you have a business. It's not just about the money, but, I mean, when you run a business, you can be a jerk or you can, you know... It only benefits you to be friendly with people, and that's just I'd rather be that way anyways. I'd rather naturally be friendly with people and, you know, get along with them to some extent.
Okay.
You know, so it worked out really well, and I made a lot of great connections, positive connections, but leaving was strange.
Leaving Porkfest was strange.
Yeah, going back to Pennsylvania was just it was hard because it was just back to having to pretend to be somebody else.
And was that the first time you realized that's what you were doing? Or is that the first time you thought about it and said, I don't like it?
I didn't realize it. I hadn't really figured it all out.
Oh, okay.
But I knew...
Something didn't feel right going home.
It just wasn't... Because, you know, when the atmosphere I was in and, you know, I don't want to badmouth anybody in my family or, you know, and that's not what I'm trying to do. But, you know, they think differently. They have different thoughts.
And values then.
And values, obviously. I mean, mine had changed. Like I said, mm-hmm. I mean, values and beliefs that I had once had and completely agreed with everything with my wife, you know, were completely changed. They were, they weren't the same anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't able to fully admit it yet, you know, after Porkfest. But I definitely felt out of place back there. And it was sad. And, you know, and you start to reevaluate all your relationships, but...
But I have a question.
Sure.
I mean, did you open up to anyone about the way that you were feeling, like the kind of confusion and loneliness and
disconnection?
No.
Disconnection.
I didn't. I wasn't really good at opening up at that point. I mean, it just. And yeah, I mean, like you were saying, you know, maybe you'd, I know I didn't handle everything perfectly. You know, I'll get to the whole story, but I wasn't really at a point in my life where I was just able to open up to people about it. I mean, that's tough to do,
including your wife. Then,
sure.
I'm taking.
Oh yeah. Okay. Even myself, though, to some extent.
All right. Just kind of like. Felt something and then realized it doesn't feel good, so stop thinking about it.
A lot of that, just burying you know, bad feelings like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And not confronting them, you know, just bottling things up, which is not healthy.
Right.
But
and also when there's the fear of judgment or like the sensation that nobody else will understand what I'm going through,
yeah.
Then that isn't really conducive to opening up either.
No, it's not. And yeah, I mean, it was just a tough all around situation. There are many aspects of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I wasn't planning on visiting New Hampshire until Liberty Forum, which, you know, got canceled.
That would have been about a half a year later.
About,
yeah.
A little more, yeah.
A little more than half a year.
And then it got canceled.
And then I got laid off from my full-time job that I had worked at for 10 years, which wasn't a bad thing. And it wasn't the end of the world. My family owns a restaurant, and imagine I had Greek-owning restaurants, diners. So I immediately went to work with back there, which I'd always worked at since I was like 12 years old. I love working. I mean, I don't have a problem. I like doing stuff. I don't like sitting around doing nothing. So yeah, I mean, I'd gotten laid off. So right there, it's like all of my taxed income was gone. So that was a string that was cut, you know?
That was the straw that broke your...
Well, no. That was the start. Like, because I
that was an opportunity.
Exactly, because I have this philosophy and, you know, there's a lot of... questionable things like I don't want to live my life a certain way. I want to get away from certain things like paying taxes and other things, but there's a lot of fear and I can't
having
really
a W-2 job. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't really do it in Pennsylvania and there's no support. There's a lot of this thing. So it's like I got laid off and it didn't click right away, but it was just I did think about that. I was like, I don't have any tax, you know, government income anymore. Okay. So it wasn't necessarily a bad thing because I was working for my father under the table.
Right.
As I always have. And
does he mind that you're saying that?
I mean, if you work at your father's restaurant, you're probably not getting a paycheck. I'm just going to say that to anybody, anywhere, in the world. I mean, when you're family, it's different. I'm just saying. But no, I mean...
So one string to the system has been cut.
Sure. That was a pretty big one.
Yeah.
And then there was a week in March where my wife and kids were going to be away. And I was originally just going to work. I wasn't going to do anything. But after I got laid off, I was like, hey, I'll come out to New Hampshire and I'll do a little cooking tour. I'll take some basic things along and some food and I'll drive around a couple different cities and I'll cook. You know, it's just like, hey, make some extra money while they're gone and hang out with some friends.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really get to spend as much time with certain, you know, with a lot of my... I did with certain people, but... There's just so many people, you know, up here, and it's just I'd like to spend more time with them while I'm working. You know, it wasn't as crazy as Porkfest.
Mm-hmm.
It's smaller crowds. It's like I could cook for everybody and then just kind of hang out.
Yep.
And that's kind of what it turned into. But it wasn't just the cooking because I was cooking every night. I came up for a week and I cooked I think like 4 or 5 nights. It was 4 nights, and but it was a lot of fun. We were doing fun things in the morning with different people in different towns and like when I went to Grafton. Jason Talley from the CD Evolution Fund, he gave me a tour, and it was really neat, and, you know, I got to hang out, and, you know, I saw Mike, and I saw Stephanie in Grafton.
Yeah.
I saw you guys up when I visited,
mm-hmm.
So that was really cool, you know, I had a lot of fun in Keene with a lot of activists, and I had a lot of fun in Manchester with people. So it was a much more intimate setting, and I say intimate like, you know, building better friendships,
right,
type of thing, you know?
Yeah.
So it was nice, you know, it was nice to have that. So I got to spend more time and get a little more personal with certain people and with tons of people. I mean, it was crazy. It was great.
I think sometimes, sorry to interrupt, Mandrick, but I think sometimes when you know that there are certain things that you have in common with people, like certain philosophical things about liberty or voluntarism or whatever, then it kind of, you, even if you're just meeting them for the first time, you kind of start off with a roadblock to having a relationship removed that there, is present, yeah, with most people.
There's a level of comfort that's already, it's like, it's just built in.
Right.
And it's theirs to, like, ruin, I guess you could say. You know what I mean? They have the same foundation of beliefs, but they're, you know, totally creepy. you know what I mean? Just to something, I don't know.
It's not outside the realm of possibility.
Yeah, yeah. It's not, but I mean,
you're not going to be best friends with everybody just because they love liberty. There are certain
just. If you have a value that you're passionate about in common with someone, it's just almost like an open door.
Yeah.
And also, if it's a value that you're kind of black-sheeped for, right?
Oh, yeah.
And they have it, too. It's just even tighter.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, yeah. It's like, I can tell you my story, but you already know because you went through the same thing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like one of those kind of things. Sure.
Yeah, totally.
Sure. So, I mean, I had a great time, and leaving New Hampshire at the end of that week was very difficult. I mean, just leaving the state, I had to just pull over because it was really tough because I realized I was going back. It really hit me then. It was like I was going back to people that didn't understand.
Mm-hmm.
Like it really started to hit me. And I had friends back home in Pennsylvania that I'd known for 15 years or whatever. And it's just like I'm totally disconnected from these people. I started reevaluating my very close relationships, and I really wasn't finding anything there. I'm like, I don't know what I have in common with these people anymore,
right,
including family, and it was tough because it's just, you don't really want to go. It's not like, oh, I want to start disconnecting from the people I've spent the most, you know, most of my life with.
Well, no, but it's like you don't know what you're missing until you experience it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I was just up here for a week, and everybody was so positive, and it was great business. And people were really excited to see me, and it's nice. It's nice to have appreciation.
You're kind of a character, I would say, like, in the liberty movement. Like, I don't know, if you pay attention to different liberty media and stuff, and
you'd know about his penis.
You would know about that, and you'd also know about, I mean, you'd just probably hear Mandrick's name, and you know,
you've heard him talk, and he's cheerful and happy and active and bubbly. And
Yeah. But I feel like I felt like I could really be myself in New Hampshire.
Hmm.
And that's really what it was. And then coming back to Pennsylvania, it felt like I had to put the mask back on.
Go back to pretending.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I started to realize I didn't want to pretend anymore. It's not who I can't be that person anymore. I can't be this guy who's just like, oh yeah, I'm religious. You know, I'm Greek Orthodox, and everything's great. Everything's fine.
And I support the government.
Sure.
And
well,
get those terrorists.
Well, the government thing was easy. I mean, that was the easiest thing for me to shed. And people, even if they disagreed with it, as long as I kept my mouth shut and then start quote unquote fights at family, you know, I started fights by saying, hey, let's not use violence to solve problems.
Yeah. Right.
Apparently that's, you know, and you,
that's
and you
a
say,
fight.
And you say it in a peaceful way. Yeah. And you say it in a peaceful way without raising your voice. And people don't like hearing that.
No.
You, as many listeners are well aware.
Oh yeah.
So, I mean, it just wasn't,
I think that's one of the toughest things for most people who are interested in voluntarism is talking to their family, the people who they have the longest established track records of communication with, and maybe kind of these unhealthy patterns.
I was going to say, and the longest history of an unhealthy relationship.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
You know, 20, 30 years of one kind of relationship, and then
one kind of relationship where there's a power dynamic, right?
Yeah.
Where
well, I mean, what about your siblings? That's not necessarily
authority.
A power dynamic.
Depends on the age.
But it's a huge history to try and overcome when your values have changed and suddenly there's a big difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not easy. And some people, I do have a couple cousins that are very liberty oriented, and and then I have some people that are more open-minded about it that don't necessarily agree but are accepting. And then there's just other relationships where it's just not that way at all. And it's just, you can't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's kind of where it was with my marriage to some extent. I mean, like I said, before we got married or before we had kids, we agreed on pretty much everything on how to, and it's just, I wasn't that person anymore.
Right.
I was not that person. Well, and it wasn't...
People change, surroundings change, everything changes.
So it started, it really...
You and your wife have very different values now.
Yeah.
You don't want to be there, you do want to be in New Hampshire.
Yeah, there's a lot of value change, you know, and I just started to realize that all my relationships, including, you know, my marriage and my friend, most of my friendships, they just didn't, they weren't as meaningful as they once were. And I couldn't make connections with people anymore like that I wanted to. And I really wanted to make those connections. Like I made connections with just friends that I'd hung out with a couple days that were very meaningful. And I wanted to have that, you know, I wanted to have that where I was living.
Right.
And it just wasn't, it got to the point where if you don't have the same philosophical agreements as me, I can't make that connection. It's just not, it's a complete incompatibility. I don't know. It's not like a stubborn.
Have no philosophical basis, really. I mean, I think most people, there are few people who have thought about.
I think maybe that's why.
I don't know if that's necessarily true.
Well, I don't know about most, but.
I think most people do, but at the same time, they're just ones that are completely statist or, you know, ones that, you know, maybe.
I think it might explain how a Jew could marry a Catholic because they just don't really have a big philosophical base in it.
That's true.
I'm Jewish because my mom was. Yeah. I'm Catholic because I was raised that way.
But that's a religious thing. I mean, like, I'm talking about,
How about Republican and Democrat together? I don't think they really care that much about their beliefs. They just kind of have them.
But I mean a more basic level than that, because that's I mean, like, the absolute foundation of how you want to interact with human beings. You know, not necessarily like where you want to go to church or.
And you think most people do have this kind of thought?
I don't know. I mean, most people probably, like, you know, I don't want to hurt other people, but, you know, I still want to pay taxes and stuff. I don't know. Like, I don't really know how to explain it well, I guess, but they have to have something, I would think. I mean,
no,
really?
I think most people really don't. I think they have, like, this eclectic hodgepodge of ideas that they
don't
for whatever reason. Yeah. Usually it's an emotional reason.
But that's something. I mean, even if it's ridiculous, it's still something.
It doesn't have a common thread, though.
Or a cohesiveness.
There are many inconsistencies within their belief system. Like, they may have a belief system, but it's so eclectic that it contains a lot of different inconsistencies.
Well, you can build a foundation out of sand and duct tape.
Sure.
Yeah. Actually, many people do. But then, what happens when the wave comes?
Yeah. But I'm saying, so there's something there. I'm just saying, it might not be as strong. Mm. It might not. I mean, mine has gotten to the point where it just that I need to have that in my in any, you know, in any friendship or any for it to be meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right.
For me to be able to, and I want to be able to have, you know, solid conversations with people and talk to them about things that
well, it's difficult to have a close relationship with someone who may want to use the government to force you to behave a certain way or to not behave a certain way. And I think it's really difficult to have a close relationship with someone who may want to use the government to force you to behave a certain way or to not behave a certain way.
Right.
And I think knowing that, if you're someone who understands the ideas of liberty and why government is force, is going to impede intimacy in a relationship.
Yeah, sure.
Right?
So what did you do about it or think about it or whatever at this time?
I started to realize that I just felt like the marriage was over. Certain friendships just weren't as meaningful, and it was tough. I didn't immediately think that, but it just
over
felt
time.
Like...
How long would you say it took you to make that realization that your marriage of, like, 8 years was over? Or 9 years?
I don't want to say it only took a couple of weeks, but at that point it only took a couple... Like, all the pieces started coming together, and it just... My beliefs were so strong that I just realized, like, I can never... We'll never see eye to eye on certain things.
Let me ask you about that.
Yeah.
You went through a few changes, Ron Paul minarchism to voluntarist to, and then atheist, which we haven't talked about yet.
No, that's coming up.
But during these changes of your values, did you try and convince your wife of them or ask her about hers? Or did you just know from living together for so long that she wouldn't agree?
I would try to bring it up, and I probably did an absolute horrible job about it. I mean, I'm not really good about trying to convince. I don't say try to convince, but I don't know, opening up ideas, especially to people that I've known the longest. Like, it's even... I could probably convince a complete stranger much easier than I could somebody. And I think that may be a general thing for a lot of people.
I think probably true.
They don't, you know...
So
well,
basically,
there's less at stake, right, with a complete stranger.
Yeah, if it doesn't work or if they hate you for it, then so what?
Whatever.
You don't know.
Yeah.
Right.
So basically then you changed, you...
Oh, you know what?
What?
Speaking of the religion thing, geez, I totally bypassed that. I really started... The whole... really after in 2009, a year after the ideas of liberty, that's really when I started to question religion. And that's when I reached the point where the whole, once the ideas of liberty really clicked in my head, religion had no place.
That's fascinating. So
it was like water and oil. Yeah. And it made no sense in my brain anymore. And once I questioned it, once I was so, you know, once my principles were there, it's just like, religion makes no sense. I mean, I'm such a logical person now, and, you know, things just, any question I could throw out about religion, it's just like, this is so ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
Like, why would somebody come back from the dead's a zombie? Okay. Yeah. I'm just going to say it. Yeah. No, but I mean, the whole idea of hell and the whole idea of being judged by, you know, this big bearded man or whatever.
And being shamed doing things that are completely natural, like eating pork or beating off or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, the Greek Orthodox faith, I mean, that's old school Christian. I mean, that's pretty much as old school as it gets. And, yeah, there's a lot of things like that. There's a lot of things they want you to believe, and it just didn't click anymore at that point. It just stopped. But I didn't talk about it with anybody.
Not even your wife?
No.
Because she's... happy being religious.
She had converted to before we got married. Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
And I was very religious too then.
Right.
We were some of the first people in church every morning on Sunday. I mean, it was like that.
Okay. So you suddenly realized religion was silly to you, and you didn't talk to your wife about it because she was still religious. Did you continue going to church with her?
At that point, I was working Sunday mornings at my dad's diner, so it was very convenient.
Good, okay.
Yeah. And I didn't want to get rid of that day.
Right.
I'd accepted it in my brain, but I didn't want to say it out loud.
Right.
And I didn't want to confront... There's a lot of things. Like I said, I could have handled these things better. And I didn't. I can't change that now.
Hopefully live and learn, right.
Yeah. So when I got... You know, fast forward back... Or go back to this trip I'd went on in March. You know, this year, 2011... You know, I came back and I just realized, like, I don't want to be this guy that has to pretend to be an atheist or pretend to be Greek Orthodox. It really what started to trigger it, you know, I was developing friendships with people, and what really the whole atheism thing came up was Holy Week. Greek Orthodox was coming up. Oh, yeah. Mike just made a face.
I don't know what Holy Week is.
Holy Week is the week of Easter.
Oh, okay.
Okay?
It's very religious thing.
Oh, yeah. There's
zombie
church
Jesus,
service.
Yeah.
Oh, they're getting ready for that zombie okay. Jesus. And wow. There are services every night from Palm Sunday, the Sunday before Easter, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Friday has like two services. Saturday has like three services.
It's like cramming for a final.
Oh, yeah. It's crazy.
It's like, get your good faith in now because Jesus is coming back.
They got
Sunday.
The Holy Week book, which is like the hall of the services. And it's just like, you could go to church with me right now, and I could tell you everything that's going on in all those services. I know all the little things that even a lot of people who just go through the motions that don't know. I have a pretty solid understanding of what's going on, what they're doing, and why they're doing it. Like a lot of people just do it, but right. I always had that. I always wanted to know why things were going on, so I have a good understanding of that. You know, even though I'm an atheist now, it's still, you know, I still
remember
feel
it, sure.
Sure. Mm. So, and I wasn't, like I said, I had gotten laid off from my job, and so I was working second shift, and Holy Week coming up, I wasn't working second shift anymore.
Oh, so no excuse.
There's no excuse.
Yeah,
yeah, this was my first Holy Week where I'd be home, and... I started getting emails about, you know, from mom, my mom and my wife, like, oh, here's the schedule for church, and this is the nights we're going, and I'm just like, I gotta say something. I can't do this. I can't go in that building and pretend.
Yeah.
You know, I can't just stand there. So, speaking of probably not doing things the best way, I just decided, I was really scared to say something, so I decided I was just gonna write this note,
on Facebook,
yeah,
right?
On Facebook, and just post it there,
and see what
happens.
What was it?
It was pretty much describing my whole...
so it was a long note.
It was a note. It was a note. You know, Facebook has the notes option, not like a status update.
Okay.
So it was, you know, it was fairly long, and I really just went into it. I just explained, like, you know, how long I've been an atheist for a year, and how I just... Oh, geez, I don't even remember the letter now.
That's okay. I'm just trying to get whether you said, I'm an atheist, click, or
no,
explain the whole thing.
It was explained.
Okay.
And did you say, like, therefore I'm not going to be, you're not going to see me at church anymore?
Well, you read it, Stephanie. I mean, you saw
it. Well, I did, but I want our listeners to know.
You want me to say
it? I want our listeners to know.
But
what did it say?
It basically went into how I just couldn't do it anymore. And it did have a lot with the liberty Liberty stuff too, because it was all intertwined with religion. And it's just like, I didn't really want to just pretend to be somebody I'm not. So that's why I just came out and said it. And I just told people, I was like, hey, you know, I can't do this anymore. I'll still go to funerals and stuff and weddings to support, you know, for support reasons.
Right.
You know, if I'm invited and they want me there, I have no problem. You know, and I can be there. But I couldn't, I have no interest in going to church anymore.
Right.
It's not an environment I want to be in. And I do believe I also mentioned about, you know, I'd like my children to be able to choose for themselves.
Oh, good
for
you.
I think I mentioned that. I did put that in there, which is,
I mean,
because I don't want to say, I don't want to tell my kids don't go to church.
Right. Well, I'm anticipating what the response was.
Yeah.
And I don't know, but whatever the response is, here's what you're saying. I want my kids to have a choice, to make a choice for themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where things were going. I mean, I really, it's starting to reach that point where it's like, hey, I want to be able to let my kids decide things for themselves to some degree. I mean, I want to at least talk to them about things and see what their opinion is and let them weigh in on it.
I bet the people in your family did not like that one bit.
Well, it was, the main reason I did it online, just like let everybody know online, was I really wanted some support.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a lot of support from the Liberty community. But it probably wasn't fair to my wife and my family to just, you know, put it out there without letting them know ahead of time.
Okay.
Because, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think... But I just didn't know what else to do, honestly. I was really kind of scared. Like, I could write this letter and then just send it to them and be like, hey, I'm putting this on Facebook. And then be like, no, don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be really messed up. So I've always kind of taken the opinion where I'd rather ask for forgiveness than permission.
Right.
Like, you know, in that type of regard. So I just did it online. There was no really good way to do this. I didn't really. It's like pick your poison. I don't know.
But it kind of says something, I think, about those relationships. It's like if you didn't feel comfortable and safe enough in the relationships with the supposed loved ones, your wife, your parents,
that you weren't happy and that you were this new person.
Hmm.
If you didn't feel comfortable, that's what you're going to say?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that just says something about the state of those relationships where there was like some major disconnection happening there already, even before you came out as an atheist.
Yeah, I mean, there was probably some of that there, for sure. But yeah, I mean, the reaction was, it wasn't good. I mean, with my local family. And
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of expected, though.
Mm.
I did get some support from some family, I have to say.
That's good.
And there were some that said, I feel the same as you, but don't tell anybody this.
Wow. And which relative was that? No, I'm just kidding.
That was
Uncle Joe.
he lives at, and his phone number is.
Well, see, that's amazing.
It was, and then there were some where, you know, they're like, hey, I like you for who you are, not what you believe. That's also fantastic.
That would be a relationship, a familial relationship in this case, that was not necessarily unhealthy.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, hey, I may not support you, but you've got to be you, and I want you to be happy, and I love you, or whatever it was.
Yeah, and the best response I got was from a cousin who actually teaches at the Greek Orthodox Seminary in Massachusetts, and he said, obviously you've thought long and hard about this, and he's like, and I encourage all the people I teach to... He actually is one of the... I've never even heard of anybody in the Greek Orthodox faith that encourages...
Thinking?
Like, thinking. That encourages questioning.
Oh, okay.
So he said, you know, he didn't say like, oh, you're making the wrong decision or anything like that. He really supported me. He's like, I'm glad, you know, I'm glad it wasn't just like a rash decision, that it was something that you really put a lot of thought into, and that's good. You should question everything.
Good.
You know, and he's like, that's what I encourage. And he even has like a domain name that is something like question everything or something. I don't know what it is, but it's not question everything. But so it was very surprising. It was very encouraging to hear things like that. You know, the little things like that you weren't expecting.
Mm.
But it really kind of just led to a conversation with my wife and I. Which just led into the marriage. And, I mean, I respect for her. I don't really want to go into too many details
about all that.
But it basically resulted in me just... Everything just coming out and just saying, like, I can't live my life like this anymore. You know, pretending. You know, we're completely different people. You know, I didn't say, like, oh, it's not you, it's me. But I told her. I was like, everything we... You know, we made a lot of agreements. And I just... All those agreements mean absolutely nothing to me anymore. In fact, I want the opposite in many of those.
Right.
You know, I don't want my kids in public school. I don't want my, you know, I don't want them to, you know, have to go to church.
Right.
I don't want them to be forced into anything. You know, I don't want to have to force them to do certain activities.
Continue only telling us what you're comfortable with. But how did she react to that?
She was hurt. I mean, I had time to think. I had spent
yeah.
so much time changing my view. You know, my views were, you know, developing. I don't want to say changing my views like that, but they were developing. Yeah. And I had a couple weeks. I really didn't say anything until I didn't write this letter until I had accepted it that mm-hmm. this really, there's no other way. And I mean, it was tough because and it really wasn't all that fair because I wasn't just like, you know, we should have some counseling or anything like that. I just didn't see that working. It just, we're mm-hmm. so completely different at that point. And, yeah, I mean, it was just hard. It was hard for her, and it's completely understandable. And really, the only thing I wanted is just, I just want to be happy, and I want her to be happy. Mm-hmm. You know, that's really all I want. I want my kids to be happy. Just everybody to be happy, you know? That's it. And it's just like, I can't provide that happiness in that relationship anymore.
Right.
But there's too much conflict. There's too much disagreement. Which is a pretty common thing with relationships that happens.
And I don't think anyone can provide someone else with happiness. I think it comes from within. I mean, someone can help meet the needs of another person, but I think that
it's their responsibility to make themselves happy.
They control whether they're happy. Yeah.
And even if that's the case, Mandrick was needing to be happy and wasn't in that relationship.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think, and maybe not necessarily happiness, but like the connection, you know?
Yeah.
And that just wasn't there anymore.
Yeah.
It just, it dissolved, and for whatever reason.
Well, I mean, I feel kind of empathy for your ex-wife because she married a completely different person.
Oh, yeah. I totally agree. I'm right there with you.
You know, so.
If I met myself like 10 years ago, 8 years ago, I would have no idea who that person is.
Yeah I've gone through that. I can understand the empathy. I guess I can feel the empathy as well. But, and I don't know your wife, never met her, and I don't know the rest of the story, how she reacted. But I know how some people do, poorly. And I think those people don't realize how much change there is in the world. People change. They've changed. They're a different person than when they were 10.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And their environment changes. Your household changed after you got children. Mm-hmm. Everything changes, and with change, sometimes... Well, I was going to say comes change, but...
With change comes change.
Yeah, sometimes change is...
Deep thoughts
sometimes
from
Sometimes change works for you, and sometimes it works against you.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of times when people change, it's just like they... You know, a couple branches change, or, you know, right. and you know, mm-hmm. or some sticks, you know, whatever you want to call it, leaves or whatever. But I had a complete change to the core. I mean, it was to the root.
Yeah.
It was a complete change, and that's tough.
Yeah.
That's tough for everybody mm-hmm. I was interacting with, because it's just... I felt like I was... I felt like everybody was treating me like I was like the crazy person in town.
Well,
and I'm like, no, you're all crazy, you know, like running around and pointing fingers. You know what I mean? That's what it felt like to me. And that's what, and it's just like I couldn't live like that anymore. I couldn't live pretending to be, you know, a part of.
Well, especially when you know that there is a way out there to get your need for acceptance met.
Yeah.
When you feel like you're living in one place and
with certain people,
nobody is really meeting that need for acceptance. And then if you go to another place with different people, then all of a sudden you do get the acceptance that you're looking for. So
this, no, okay, this at this point,
this
that
is
was
April.
Less than 2 months ago, right?
This is the middle of April.
Okay.
And then about a couple weeks later, I was like, I need to just, I had to be in New Hampshire because I felt very uncomfortable in Pennsylvania.
So now you're expressing your individuality and who you are and you're telling all your loved and close intimate relationships,
sure.
as you said. And you're not getting a lot of support, at least from the intimate relationships. And I'm guessing it's awkward.
It's oh, sure. It's very awkward.
And you have no support because all the people you connect with are now geographically 8 hours away.
8 hours away. You got it. So I decided to come up for a weekend and just kind of just disappear for a couple of days, which was very helpful. You know, just kind of recharge. And it was helpful and it was great. And I'm glad I did that. And I really wasn't planning on coming up again until Pork Fest. But... the Bardo Farm Festival took place, which took place a couple weeks before Pork Fest, or weeks or whatever. And I was like, hey, why don't I go up there and cook some food, and we'll do that and have a good time. But between trips, all I was thinking about, and this isn't a healthy thing, all I was thinking about was like, oh, I can't wait till the next trip to New Hampshire.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I still have these kids at home that I care deeply about, and it's just like, I can't get my mind off of... Not just New Hampshire, of course. I mean, that's a state, whatever. But, I mean, that whole being around... Yeah, the happiness, being around people that are like-minded, having that acceptance. Mm-hmm. You know, I was starting to realize that I had these needs that weren't being met at all in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just... I felt very alone. And I felt straight-up homesick to a place...
For New Hampshire.
That I'd only visited twice.
Right.
Mm.
I mean, it's crazy. But that's what I, that's the only way I could describe the feeling was a homesickness.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like I could, it's not like I could stop it. I mean, it was there.
Right.
It was very real. And you know, I just found myself just kind of spending a lot of time by myself and just, it wasn't good. You know, it wasn't a happy time. And just trying to, you know, or just talking to people, you know, New Hampshire natives online or whatever on Skype and whatnot. And it's just like, yeah, I didn't want to live my life like that, you know, mm-hmm. but.
So what'd you do?
Or... So I came up to Bardo Farm Festival, which was nice. And I came and I stayed for a week. And I had a great time. We, you know, we sold a lot of food. You know, we work hard. I love working hard. It was me and Jay again. And I love that. I love making that connection. I really enjoy being able to do my own thing. You know, run the stand and put my reputation online. I want to have a strong reputation, you know, for being able to serve the, you know, the best food, for making the best of what I do, you know.
Right.
So I like to bust my ass, you know. I want people to be happy, and I want to connect with people when they come up there to buy the food and, you know, interact with them. And that's, you know, that's what I was looking for, and I get that, you know, and that's great. And people love it, and I love it. So it's a nice thing to have. And then leaving New Hampshire that time was tough. But it's like, oh, you know, Porkfest is coming up 3 weeks.
Okay.
I'll be back. But it really got to the point where the day before Porkfest was the last day, or the day before I was leaving for Porkfest is my last day in the house. And I still live at this house, even though, you know, we were starting to go through the legal divorce. But, you know, as a voluntarist, you know, I felt like the marriage was over when we had the conversation and I explained it. And, you know, but obviously you still have to go through, there's still strings to
cut. Government's in the relationship, government's
getting
it out. Yeah.
I gotta purge certain aspects of government.
Yep.
So that was the day that was my last day at that house. You know, we'd worked out some agreements for when, you know, I can't be home during these hours, and I was being as amicable as possible. I'm not looking to start fights. You know, like I said, all I really wanted was for her to be happy. Find mm-hmm. whatever makes her happy.
Right.
Whatever she can do to be happy. That's because, I mean, she's the mother of my children. You know, and her happiness has an effect on them, of course. Because kids can pick up all that stuff.
Oh, well, sure.
If you're not happy, they're the first ones to tell you. They're like, why aren't you happy? Because a lot of, you know, other people can pick up on it too, but they won't say something.
Right.
Kids will say it. They don't, and, you know, and if you're lying to them, they know. They
can
pick this stuff up. So, and my daughter's totally picked up on it. And at this point, they're 7. So,
The day before you came out for Porkfest was.
Well, no, the day I left for Porkfest.
It was the last day you were in that house.
The last day I'm in that house. A couple weeks before, she was asking me, hey, do you have an address yet for where you're going to live? And I told her, at this point, I'm doing so much preparation for Porkfest.
Right.
I'm making like these crazy bacon weaves, like 200 of these things. I have all this baklava I'm making. I mean, it's literally like consuming my life.
Hundreds of pounds of meat.
Yeah. I mean, there's just so much. There's so much logistical stuff. Like I said, if I'm doing something, I'm doing it right.
Yeah.
I'm not messing around. And
it takes a lot of work to prepare for feeding 1,000 people.
Exactly. Over a week.
Over a week. Yeah.
So, I feel good now. We're ready for Porkfest. You know, that's fine. I felt, you know, we were ready to go, and but it was just still a lot of prep work. And you know, she asked me, she's like, "Do you have an address yet?" And I was like, I honestly haven't really looked for a place to stay. And I knew I had options. Like I'm sure if I asked my parents, they would have let me stay with them. They've always been supportive.
Where are they? New Hampshire?
No, they're in what? No, my parents are in Pennsylvania.
Oh, I see. So
no,
just out of the house.
Out of the home.
Gotcha.
Out of that house. And I had said with the divorce, I was like, look, I want you to have everything. You know, I don't need a lot of things. I did fill everything I need in my car. I mean, I'm not so attached to certain things, but I want my children to be and as much, you know, to have the things that they need and such. And I don't want it to be any more difficult than it has to be.
Okay.
So, you know, so I hadn't really said anything to anybody. I could have asked some people if I could crash at their place. But it's not really my style. I want to be able to do things on my own. But it got to the point where I was saying it, but at the same time I was thinking, I can't imagine finding a place, you know, signing a lease for a year at some apartment
right.
in a place I don't even, it doesn't feel like home anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's when she said to me in an email, she's like, are you seriously considering moving to New Hampshire? And I told her, yes. I mean, that I was. And I think she understood. And because at that point, it's just, that's the only way I can be happy. And it's sad because I have kids there. You know, I have my kids back home. Back, I don't even call it, I said home, but it's not, it doesn't even feel like home anymore. It's the place I was born. But, and it's tough. I mean, it's a hard situation, but at the same time, I really thought it through and I talked to a lot of people. I didn't really see any other option. It's just like, I could live a life. I mean, here's what it came down to. Here's my choices. I could live a life where I'm not really happy, kind of going through the grind, just like everybody else, just a cog, whatever. I have my beliefs and I complain about things, but I don't really do anything about it. And my kids are there. I see them all the time and yeah, I'm not that happy. You know, typical, you know, even though I had these ideas of liberty, it's just like, I can't act on them. And, or I could, you know, I could move to New Hampshire and actually, you know, when I have what little time I may have to spend with my kids or if I have to Skype with them and things like that, it would be more meaningful. And at the same time, all this is going on, as it's building up, I have such an overwhelming fire, this urge to be a part of this movement. And the only thing I can compare it to, which I really don't like making this comparison, but for someone to understand who's not in the movement, it'd be like somebody who has the urge to serve in the military kind of thing, and everybody looks at them like a hero, or go overseas to open a church in some African country, and it's just like, oh wow, you know, look at the sacrifice they're making,
right?
And that's, well, I don't know if it's about sacrifice. It's
that's what they would say.
Yeah,
going to the military is a sacrifice. Yeah, well,
sacrifice your own life.
Innocent people, right?
Yeah, yeah. Other people's lives. Yeah.
That's a terrible sacrifice.
Yeah.
But that's what I can compare that to. Yeah. I have this passion and this desire, and I can't quench it anymore living in Pennsylvania. And I've had that since I found out about the liberty movement. I mean, I started my business within a month of hearing the message. I was like, I heard Ian Freeman on Free Talk Live say you need to start taking baby steps into liberty, and I was like, I'm going to start a bagger's business. That's a baby step.
That's a bigger, bigger than a baby.
Yeah,
that's a big baby.
I got big feet and a big stride.
That's
all right?
Twins. You had twins. Yeah. Yeah, well, I think everybody wants to feel efficacious and have meaning in life, right?
That's
to do things that seem meaningful.
Yeah, I just that passion has taken me over. It was just taken over, and it's just. I couldn't pretend that it wasn't there anymore, and it was eating away at me. Like I couldn't sleep as well, and it's just like I needed to do that, and I can't do that where I'm at. You know, I have this desire to, you know, I don't want to pay taxes anymore. I don't want to. There's so much, I just want to detach myself from the system, and it's not all going to happen overnight. But there's just more. I need to take more steps.
I saw you write something that said, you know, I felt the difference between liberty loving and liberty living.
That's really what it was.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really what it was. Yeah. I did say that. That was a pretty good quote. Thanks.
Well, I thought it was very apt because it's like there's a difference between espousing certain principles and actually putting them into practice in your own life.
Remember that.
Yeah. And you know where I get that from is from, because I don't want to toot my own horn, but I read people. I've always been kind of like, I like to play poker, but I've always... I like to look at situations and I'll kind of see, like working at a restaurant and interacting with people all the time, you see these couples that come in every day that aren't happy together and they eat every day and they're old and it's like they spend their whole life in this miserable situation. It's just like, I bet both of these people could have had a really happy existence.
We've talked about this before.
If they just found something else, you know, like...
If it might be really hard to end a relationship, but it's got to be less hard than living it for 30 years.
Yeah. And it's not that one or the other is necessarily a bad person. No. I mean, it could be that.
It could be, but it could...
In most situations, it's not.
It's just that there's change.
Yeah, they're not, you know, they're not the high school sweethearts anymore that they were now that they're 75 years old. It's like, wow. So... You know, there was I would see that working back at the restaurant again. I see that, and it's just like I can't do that.
So you've changed. You realized that you weren't happy and didn't fit in the life that you had built.
Yeah,
and you did something about it. And are you at this point where it's still actually in the process of happening, leaving and moving and whatnot? Are you and your wife amicable? Are you talking?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're as amicable as we can be.
Okay,
I understand it's really hard for her, and I know, you know, there's very stressful times, and I mean, let's face it, I'm not going to be there for the kids like I used to be, and I grew up they grew up with me, being home during the day,
right?
Since they were pretty much born, and I would work second shift, and then I'd also work weekends at my dad's diner, and then I also had my agorist business, and I was around them a lot, you know. And so, not to say she wasn't. I mean, of course she was doing a lot
but
too.
They're,
absolutely,
they're about to go through a dramatic change. Yeah. Dad's not there
and it's
physically
tough.
Anymore.
And it's
so they're about seven now. Seven
they're,
or eight?
They're about seven and a half. Yeah.
And have you explained to them
yes.
any of this?
Yes.
How much, like, just a synopsis of which of these facets, like atheism or change, everything.
Everything. I've talked to them. They, any question they've asked me, I've just been honest with them.
And how about, I don't want to put words in your mouth in the asking of this question, uh-huh. but how about, like, the expression of any emotions between you and them?
What do you mean? I'm not sure.
Well, did you, do they know that you want to still be around them and this is hard for you?
I think they understand to some on a basic level.
Okay.
I would say because I mean, like I said, I've been around them so much, and I still want to be around them. But I just realized it's just there's no easy answer. I knew there would be no easy answer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, I tried to explain to them. It's like I don't want to be around you all the time if I'm not happy, and if I'm not. Living the life I want, you know, being the person I want to be. And I think they get that.
And that's what you said to them.
That's what I said to them.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I said. That's pretty much the exact wording.
Can you summarize their responses?
I mean, they cried, of course.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's... And I actually said this. I think with children, I think children are much more resilient than adults because they'll just let their emotions out, you know. They'll share their feelings and then...
Move on.
They can cope with that.
Yeah.
And... You know, they go back outside and they'd be playing with their friends a little bit later. And that's exactly what they did. Have a couple hug it out. And then...
Hug it out.
You know? Yeah. Not to trivialize it. But yeah, I mean, that's...
Also, this is kind of a tangent, but, you know, a child of seven doesn't have a history of 30 years of not changing. Maybe change is much easier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Not to say that they're going to be okay when you're gone, but
yeah.
It's just a change. I mean, if you still Skype them and email and call them and still answer their questions and talk to them and help them grow up,
yeah.
The only difference is that you won't be physically there.
Yeah, which
big.
I just felt like I reached the point. And another thing with my decision to move, I felt like I reached the point where I couldn't have the influence I wanted on their life if I wasn't living my life, my philosophy.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's why I was saying about living the liberty philosophy. It's like. I could sit there and talk about it with them and then not do it, or I could just actually do it and then be like, hey, check out this video.
Right.
Look what daddy's doing. Right. You know? And it's just like, I'd rather them see me living what I talk about than, and I can't, you know, I can't do that in Pennsylvania, but I can do that in New Hampshire on a much wider, you know, much larger scale.
Right.
So that's really what it came down to. And it's just like, I want them to see me who I am, and then... That doesn't guarantee anything. They could still grow up and not be happy with me and not want to talk to me. But you know what? They could do the same thing if I was with them my entire life.
Right. In fact, it would be more likely because you wouldn't have been happy.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's exactly what I'd see with people. It's just...
Yeah.
And I kind of relate it to... It's kind of like those friends you have that live further away. Not like necessarily like liberty-oriented. But I mean like in general, like maybe you have a cousin overseas or something that you love spending time with, but they only come like once every other year. And you have such meaningful time when they're there that week.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like... You have the week you spend with them is more meaningful than like 3 years you spend with, I don't know, coworkers
right.
or, you know, certain family mm-hmm. other family members. So it's just like it came to the idea of I'd rather my time with them be more meaningful than
sure.
quality versus quantity.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Well, sounds like you've already told them that, but make sure they keep knowing how you feel about them.
This is the start, so.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say, in fact, I'm going to say, congratulations on doing what it takes to become happy. It's as hard as it was, or is.
It's bittersweet, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the one word I use to describe it. I don't know how else to describe it. Because, I mean, I'm happy to be here, but it's not the perfect situation.
No,
but what is? I mean,
exactly.
there's no such thing.
You know, perhaps you'll take after your kids and be resilient to change, and in a year or two, the bittersweet will kind of dissolve, and maybe you'll be more friendly with your wife, who will also be happy because of the separation.
Ex-wife,
I should say.
Yeah, I wanted to be as you know. I wanted to find happiness.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really there. Really is no. There's no hatred. There's nothing like that. I mean,
right.
People might not necessarily believe that, but I can honestly say that there's no. Yeah, I don't have
just difference.
Exactly, and situation sucks. I understand that, but at the end of the day, I mean, you got to be true to yourself. Otherwise, I mean, you only live once, and if nobody wants to be around somebody living their life, you know, miserably and not.
Yeah. You only have one life.
Yeah. Not being true to your philosophy.
And good luck to you at Porkfest. I hope you run out of food, but not until an hour before you leave.
That would be the ideal. Yeah. So, yeah, Mandrake, I just want to thank you so much for sharing your story, because I think a lot of people will hear it and be inspired by it and feel some courage because of what you went through. And just knowing that you were able to take your life back into your own hands and sort of become happy out of a bad situation. Yeah.
And one other thing I'd say is, even if this doesn't work out, it's kind of like, hey, at least I tried, you know? Even if the worst case scenario happens, I don't know, you know? Mm-hmm. I can't predict what's going to happen. I can't necessarily say, oh, this is the perfect choice, you know, this is exactly... You know, I think I am 100% certain this is the right thing to do, but I don't know if it's going to work out. I don't know that, but that's the challenge of life, you know? But at least I'm not, at least it seems like...
You're trying to make yourself happy and not just being complacent.
Yeah, it's like going nowhere, you're just like giving up.
Right.
Yeah. That's what it feels like. And I totally just quoted a Less Than Jake song, if anybody gets that reference, Al's War. I'm
just saying.
But yeah, that's what I just thought of right there. I mean, that's what it feels like, going nowhere is like giving up. And I don't want to give up.
So. Nice.
For the children.
It's for the children, yeah.
What about the kids?
For the children.
I think that's a good words to close out the show by. So thank you so much for listening. This has been Pork Therapy, and you can visit us on the web at porctherapy.com, right?
That's correct.
Yep. And ask us your relationship questions@porktherapy.com.
Or 419, call us at 419-PT-LOVE-4.
Yes, indeed. And
take it away, Hannah.
We'll see you next time.
Bye.
They're two crazy porks who host a show. They give relationship advice that you ought to know. Your thirst for entertainment, they will quench, 'cause Stephanie's a darling and Mike is a mensch. Pork therapy, advice this good is a rarity. It's cool, fun, and introspective. Relationship talk from a liberty perspective. Oh, and did I mention you can leave a message, you can voice a question, a joke, a comment, or something more at 419-PT-LOVE-4.